Hello and welcome to another episode of the CBO Speaks podcast. I'm your host, Donna Shealy. Happy to have you all join us today. Today, we are speaking to Rob Kramer. He is the Vice Chancellor for Finance and Administration for the University of Wisconsin-Madison. Welcome, Rob.
Thank you, Donna. It's a pleasure to be here.
Oh, we're so excited to have you. So I usually like to go all the way back to your days of undergrad and take us all the way through to where you are to just tell us your journey that led you to the University of Wisconsin.
So that is a long journey. I don't know how many years we have, and you had to edit this down.
Yes.
But it is kind of instructive because in part of it comes around full circle. So I went to a small regional liberal arts college in Michigan, Alma College, undergraduate. And if you had told me at that time I was going to be a vice chancellor at a R1 like University of Wisconsin-Madison, I would have said that's not even in my kind of thoughts or imagination. But here I am, and I'm remarkably grateful for this opportunity. So I did my undergraduate, had a really interesting, I think, experience, learned a lot about how to think about problems at a small liberal arts school, a lot of writing, a lot of reading kind of assignments, a lot of time close with faculty, came to University of Wisconsin-Madison, got a couple of master's degrees, one in economics, one in public policy, learned that I really enjoyed working in the field of public policy, thinking about issues, and was fortunate enough to, after graduating, get a job with the State of Wisconsin Department of Administration, State Budget Office. So not in higher ed right out of the gate, but working there on policy issues in a civil service capacity for governors. And I was fortunate enough to have opportunities to think about policy issues across the state of Wisconsin. And so I think in part that one helped me learn more about Wisconsin as a person from Michigan, about the state. And two, pretty quickly gave me some degree of both comfort and understanding of how to work with things that are large and at scale. One of the programs I was tasked with, to date myself a little bit, was working with all of the public schools in the state of Wisconsin to find ways to accelerate the adaption and deployment of the internet.
Oh.
And so that's, you know, that was a while ago. But it really forced me and the team I was leading to think about, for Wisconsin's case, 427 school districts, multitude of libraries, community colleges, and in part the University of Wisconsin system then, you know, how do we create public policy that really enables, accelerates schools moving forward with really adapting the current technology so that their programs can really make use of it and start to realize the benefits of this new technology from, you know, Ashland, Wisconsin to Racine, from, you know, Platteville, Wisconsin to Green Bay and everywhere in between. And it was a really fascinating challenge working with utilities, working with the FCC at that time, with some of their programs. And that was some of the first exposure I had to working with the University of Wisconsin system, because they were involved in helping craft that program. And so to jump ahead a couple of years, I found myself ready to make a change, and I tried out working at a consulting firm where I was involved in their public sector practice. And that was probably, I tell people, the best unsuccessful career move I've made. It was the year where I had the greatest clarity on my goals, but I found that I really missed the sense of mission. And working at public purpose versus kind of the financial focus and customer service piece, which were really important. But waking up in the morning, I kind of missed that public service mission. And so I had the opportunity to return back to the Wisconsin Department of Administration after about a year, writing leadership in a couple of different areas. And again, I was fortunate enough then to get to work with the different University of Wisconsin campuses. And so in about 2007, a chief business officer position opened up at University of Wisconsin-Platteville. And you know, I thought these are really interesting jobs. I enjoy working with this group of individuals. They seem to be passionate about what they're doing. I'm going to try and see if I can kind of make this move from state government to higher ed. And I was fortunate enough to be given the opportunity. And that was kind of when I got into higher ed and really found it was exciting. The challenges day to day were really interesting, sometimes thorny. And it was very rewarding working with students closely at a regional comprehensive. So I got to spend a lot of time interacting directly with students and also with faculty. And just the excitement of going to a commencement at a place that really is, it was an access institution, a lot of first-gen students graduating, their families. Just the joy, the excitement, the hooping and hollering at graduations. It was just so uplifting to kind of think about being part of that with the team I was leading. So I think that really kind of gave me the higher ed is a good place to be. There's a lot of satisfaction here, and I can contribute to getting the mission. So I spent about 10 years at University of Wisconsin-Platteville, 2017-ish. I went to work at the University of Wisconsin system, because obviously in Wisconsin, we got the UW system with multiple institutions. Platteville was one of them. And there I was the vice president for administration, and I got to enjoy working with all the campuses in different ways. And that was, again, very rewarding. Got to lead a couple of really interesting projects there. I was there during the pandemic, and so working with all the campuses on how to respond to the pandemic early in March of 2020. Many of us remember where we were through the fall of 2020 and figuring out how to reopen campuses and do all the testing and safety measures. Also got to work closely with the Wisconsin restructuring of the 2 and 4 year campuses. And that was a very challenging project. And I don't know if we'll ever really know how that might have played out because the pandemic came shortly afterwards and it changed so much. You know, the other piece there that was a fascinating, interesting, and not in the original discussions of what were key responsibilities was the establishment of a information security program across the UW system. There were a lot of things going on at that point around the need for greater organization, greater resourcing, greater management, more intensive management of the risks presented by our information security programs, the IT systems we were using, and getting to stand that up across the UW system collaboratively with the other institutions was really kind of very rewarding and enjoyable.
Yeah.
Then kind of, you know, to the present tense, in the fall of 2020, I had the opportunity to come to the University of Wisconsin-Madison, working for then the chief business officer, Laurent Heller, to provide leadership in what I thought was going to be a relatively short stay in the facilities and planning group. But due to some changes in his career path, I was given the opportunity to become the vice chancellor of finance and administration. And I feel very fortunate to be able to serve UW-Madison students, its faculty, and the entire state in this role now. So that's kind of an interesting piece of it. And so it's kind of this interesting journey through different parts of the higher education tapestry.
Yeah.
And then at the same time, looping back to my undergraduate experience, I now serve on the board of trustees at Alma College and to try and bring a perspective to their conversations around higher education and the things that are going on and the things that board members need to think about.
Wow, what a journey. Okay, we're going to delve into some of those things you just touched on as we go. But, you know, being at the University of Wisconsin, we know that it's cutting edge research facilities. I mean, just a long history of academic excellence. And I know they have a commitment to diversity and inclusion and, you know, just all of those wonderful things at this top research school. So, first of all, tell us everything that you supervise now. That's everything that you are over at UW-Madison.
Yeah. So right now, in terms of kind of my portfolio of responsibilities, it's a really interesting and fun one. So I lead the University of Wisconsin-Madison Police Department. university housing, which includes dining, the budget and finance areas, our facilities planning and management groups, our human resources office, and our administrative improvement and planning team. And then in addition, I serve as executive sponsor for a number of projects that are going on, most particularly the implementation of Workday to replace both our current HR and finance systems. So those are, you know, kind of the formal organizational responsibilities. And then obviously is vice chancellor serving as a advisor to the provost, the chancellor, consulting with the University of Wisconsin system and members of the Board of Regents, interacting with elected officials and community members.
Awesome.
So it's varied and interesting.
Yes. Well, let's go back a little bit and then we'll come back up to the present. But I want to talk about your transition from state government to higher ed. Talk to me about really how that went about and what were some of your first impressions when you made that transition.
Higher ed, University of Wisconsin Platteville, was very different than being in a fairly structured, hierarchical state agency, working on the things I was doing there. As I already kind of mentioned, the exposure right away to students, we had about 8,000 students and residents on campus. And so just that energy day in and day out was remarkably different than what I was used to in a kind of more office-y environment. And quickly learning that it's good to hire students and have them working in my office. So every day I was getting a chance to interact more deeply with students as they were kind of helping us get things done. The culture in Wisconsin, obviously shared governance is really important. And University of Wisconsin Platteville took that very seriously, both faculty, student shared governance, and staff. And so learning quickly that that really is one, important, both the symbolism of it and the substance. And two, that if you're proactive working with shared governance groups, you can actually move a lot of interesting things forward. You know, the biggest challenge is if you don't engage in a timely manner, that they kind of appropriately kind of say, why are you bringing us something that's already done? We could have been consulted on this.
Right.
And, you know, then the third thing that that really jumped out at me was the, I think, lack of a institutional understanding of risk and the types of risk that were being accepted by the institution without being kind of assessed and understood. Is this a risk worth taking? And part of it, it's the non-hierarchical culture. We want faculty to be out doing entrepreneurial things and interesting things. And in part, it was just lack of ways to float up the questions. You know, if it was a contract with a external party, you know, were there things that it was committing us to that were challenging? If it was travel with a group of students, was it being appropriately assessed in terms of the safety and the well-being of all involved? So that was just, it was a very different thing for me than, again, coming from that state structure.
Well, let's talk about some of those challenges. You mentioned the word risk. So talk to me, give us an example of a time when you learned a lesson dealing with those risks and you overcame it, or maybe you didn't do it as well. And if you look back, you're like, okay, I could have did that a little differently. So talk to us about an example of that.
A couple of things come to mind. I think at University of Wisconsin Platteville, the culture when I was there, there was a lot of interest in, you know, finding ways to really generate revenue for the institution to support the mission, which was great and important. And that led to, you know, for example, trying to bring in third parties during the course of summer programming. And some of those third parties were pretty sophisticated. They had their shows under control. They kind of had good structure. Other groups did not. It was a little bit more fly by the seat of your pants. And I remember getting a call one night late about a problem at a third party camp that had arisen and there was no one around, like, who could take responsibility for it. And it involved a minor. And so it was a serious thing. It was just like, okay, in hindsight, after we made sure the minor was in a good place, talking through with the team, like, how are we going to deal with this going forward? the other one, which happened a little bit after I got there for a while and had built my team out, a different kind of risk. The campus was struck by a tornado in June of 2014. And so the risk there was, you know, are we going to be able to recover operations in time for the fall semester? Is anyone hurt seriously by the actual event? What is in the emergency operations center needing to be doing day in and day out for the entirety of the summer to get us back to operations? And so it was kind of a different set of challenges around the risks that large institutions face.
Yeah. Yeah. Was there major damage during that tornado of 2014?
We had about 3,500 residence hall beds at the time, and about a third of them were unusable the day after the tornado. And so we had significant damage in that one part of the campus. And an interesting, you know, little lesson learned from it, calling around to some other schools that had tornadoes and damage. The debris field was something that was highlighted. The tornadoes, you know, they pick up a lot of glass and spread it around. We talked to a couple of institutions that a decade later were still having people get lacerations from glass that had gotten embedded in the soils. And so there were lots of things, big and small, to work through as we recovered.
Wow. Yeah. I was definitely wondering about that, because I know there, just like you said, there's things that you don't even think about that can be remaining years after. So, yeah. Wow. So talk to us a little bit about when you were the vice chancellor for facilities planning and management. I'm sure that really gave you some good insight as to what you are doing now. I mean, just being over those parts of the university. Can you talk to us a little bit about that a little bit more?
So I came over naively thinking I'm going to be in this facility planning and management role for a while, taking care of some particular problems and challenges there. Didn't last as long as I had thought. So I had always understood University of Wisconsin-Madison is a fairly decentralized institution. I think that's one of our strengths. Once I got here and started learning about how things got done, I realized this place is truly decentralized. in ways that manifest themselves really great. In other ways, like it's hard to communicate and get certain things just taken care of. You know, that was kind of on the back end of the pandemic. And so we're still in kind of the full safety protocols, doing some testing still. But also really getting focused on, okay, coming out now, how do we restart some activities? How do we get some things moving? That was probably also a really good just first exposure for me on the scale of the research enterprise here at the university. I had not really spent time leading a group that had such a large research infrastructure, the facilities. I quickly learned that much of the research in the STEM areas requires, you know, remarkably sophisticated spaces, labs, infrastructure to support it, including a group that was in my purview that ran a helium recycling utility. Because helium is, you know, an element that I guess one could say we're not making anymore. But the cost of purchasing helium, you know, bounces up and down significantly. And so UW-Madison's created this group that recycles it, recaptures it to use over and over for research. That was just a remarkable example of all the things that have to go well in the background to support our faculty and research endeavors. And again, kind of getting started in that, in the exposure to those couple things like that, really understanding the scale of research at UW-Madison, you know, being number 8 in the country in terms of research expenditures, having the kind of the breadth of the research activities. It's exciting, fun, challenging, and there's always something amazing going on.
Well, let's talk a little bit about mentorship, Rob. I know you mentioned when you made your transition, the CBO that was in place moved on or retired, and then you came into there. Did you have mentorship relationships with him, or who were some of your big mentors that kind of helped you as you moved up?
Yeah, I've been very fortunate to have good mentoring, primarily informally throughout my career. And I think back to my first supervisor coming out of graduate school, a remarkably thoughtful, conscientious person who I still talk to on a pretty regular basis. and trade ideas and thoughts around things. And he really got me thinking about what is it to be in a public service job? How can you approach things? What are some of the things you have to be aware of? And also really trying to figure out how do we get to yes when being asked to help solve problems. And that's still something that really sticks with me today. As you know, within state governments, within large organizations, you can have a lot of barriers to yes, where it becomes very easy to say, well, we can't do that or we don't do that. And trying to figure out ways to understand and help people refine kind of the problem statement, what is it we're really trying to get done here? And then is there a way to accomplish that effectively is something I still kind of find is a lot of fun and challenging day in, day out. You know, when I came over to the University of Wisconsin system at Platteville, I was fortunate both there to have some really good colleagues who helped me understand and think about the transition to higher ed. And within the UW system, there was a very strong group of chief business officers at the other campuses. And coming into that group, they were very welcoming and very free with their support and giving advice and counsel on how to move forward. And then, coming into this current role, my predecessor was very free and generous with his time. And I've been able to plug into a number of kind of professional networks and learned a lot from colleagues at other large publics and privates about how to tackle some of these things. And I still look back to some of the people I've worked with over the years in state government to really kind of think through some of the challenges and problems and how to tackle some of these interesting issues. So I've been very fortunate that way. And like I said, I still stay in touch with many of these folks.
Well, let's talk about, I even hear in your voice the excitement when you talk about students and the energy that you say that, is on the campus, which it's so great. And I want to talk to you about student access and outcomes. And so what are some successes that you've had related to student success? We know with access and affordability and those types of things. Talk to us about that.
So I think UW-Madison is pretty remarkable in terms of affordability for students. This past year, we had 63% of our undergraduates left here with zero debt.
Wow.
And that's pretty incredible.
That is.
And, there's some exciting programs that are being launched. Bucky's Pell Pathway here provides the full cost for undergraduate students if you're eligible. Our chancellor just recently announced the Wisconsin Tribal Education Promise. So it provides full cost coverage for undergraduate students who are enrolled members of federally recognized tribes, if they're Wisconsin residents. And for JD and MD students, who again are Wisconsin residents, enrolled members of federally recognized tribes, it covers their in-state tuition fees for JD and MD programs.
Oh, goodness.
Okay. And so that, I think, is really important in examples of Madison's commitment to affordability.
Yeah.
Being at UW-Platteville was an access institution. There we really did try and focus on, how do we provide support services, a lot of first-generation students, a lot of others who didn't really know how to approach being at college because they didn't have those role models. And so trying to partner with different colleagues, let's say the student affairs group, and find solutions. And I think one of the important roles is the chief business officer is partnering with your colleagues in academic areas, research areas, student success, and really figure out how do we resource those things that are critical. In the space of students, it is that, depending on the mission, the affordability, the accessibility for students, both traditional and non-traditional.
Well, let's transition from the students to you as an employer. Let's talk about some workforce-related solutions that you've used to help some of those pressure points that you have as an employer.
Yeah, I think as an employer, it's a really challenging space right now to be in for a bunch of reasons. And higher ed employers are not the only ones who are facing these challenges, right? With the current, just the remarkable changes in the workforce the last couple of years, pandemic, employees looking for different value propositions. We have about 22,000 employees here at Human Medicine, range from custodial nighttime crews that, in January are removing snow. Obviously faculty, other remarkable researchers, and then senior executives. And recently we've been updating our kind of strategic priorities for my office. And the top kind of category is the one around the people who are here. Because I think for the next decade at least, being able to retain and recruit talented individuals will be the key driver on, are we able to fulfill our mission? So a couple of things, that we're doing, I think, that are kind of interesting here around employment. We have, in the last couple of years, started a job rotation program for new hires, where we bring in individuals who've graduated just recently in the areas of HR, finance, and IT, and they have a two-year kind of onboarding process where they rotate between central HR, finance, IT, and distributed units to kind of get a variety of different experiences and fairly continuous mentoring, coaching throughout that also is a way to both, hire the next generation of employees and also work to be intentionally trying to diversify our employee group. And we're on our fifth cohort now of that. And then another one that we started up recently in the facilities area that I'm excited about is we've been working with a number of the trades unions to create an internal apprenticeship program. Because we look at the kind of the age profile of our craftspeople, average age is over 50. And so we're going to be seeing a lot of turnover in that group in the next decade or so and really thinking about how do we do some growing of our own. Bring people into what can be really rewarding careers and have transfer of knowledge between the people who know these buildings inside and out right now and the next generation who will be entrusting the stewardship of our facilities to.
Very important. So what do you think, Rob, is the vision for higher ed right now? What is your vision? Where do you see higher ed in the future?
That is a great question. We come into this new year and given all the pressures that you and I could articulate for the last several weeks or months, I am a firm believer that higher education is a remarkable value proposition. And the experiences, the learning, the networking, the growth that particularly traditional undergraduates experience at different higher education institutions is something that's going to be important going forward for our workforce, for our communities, for our nation. It doesn't mean it's going to stay the same. And we have to be in higher ed, I think, thinking about what are the needs of the future students, the future employers, and how do we adjust and refine. And, one of the exciting things in higher ed that I've gotten experience is this really rich tapestry of different institutions and different parts of the market for learning, ranging from UW-Platteville and very much an access institution for first gen to a place like University of Wisconsin-Madison, which, we are selective. But we're also seeing a number of remarkable first-generation students, international students, and also returning students and adults who are looking for continuing educational opportunities. How do we provide, experiences that are really, really beneficial and valuable for them? I think one of the keys for University of Wisconsin-Madison is going forward, are more and more people at the coffee shop able to articulate some way that UW-Madison has impacted them positively? And just being more intentional about that statewide impact.
Do you feel optimistic, I should say? You've been doing this for some time. You've been in this system, even though it may not be as a CBO the full time, but you've been in higher ed for some time. So do you personally feel optimistic about the direction that higher ed's going?
I am optimistic about the direction of higher ed. We're not monolithic. And there's going to be a lot of challenges. Individual institutions are experiencing the current pressures very differently. There will be mergers. There will be some institutions that don't make it. I'm worried about the kind of divergence between, let's say, the flagships and a number of other institutions. Wisconsin, you see that. You see that in other states. But I am optimistic because I think what we provide is critically important to the future of the country and the future of people really realizing their dreams and their hopes. And we have to, again, be attentive, listen to our critics, learn from them, learn from the feedback we get, think about where do we need to be in the future. The set of challenges is remarkably long. I think those who have been in these jobs decades past, if we want to go back however many years, would also have articulated a lot of challenges and things that were really hard to work through. And we build upon the successes, the decisions they made. I don't want to be Pollyannish about it.
Right.
I am optimistic. Yeah.
That's good. No, that's good. It's good to hear. Well, you know what? I thank you so much for your time, and I thank you for your commitment to higher ed. You know, we need to hear that, and we need to hear that optimism and encouragement. So we just thank you. And thanks for spending some time with us today, Rob. We really appreciate it.
Well, thank you, Donna. Thanks for all you do. And thanks for Nakubo. Big shout out to the organization.
Yes. And thank you all for joining us today for this episode of CBO Speaks. It's brought to you by the National Association of College and University Business Officers. You can find resources for today's episode, as well as a wide variety of research and tools, at Nakubo.org. Make sure you subscribe to CBO Speaks wherever you get your podcast so that you can get the latest episodes instantly. And on behalf of Rob Kramer from the University of Wisconsin-Madison, I want to thank you for joining us on CBO Speaks. I'm Donna Shealy. Be well. CBO Speaks is a production of the National Association of College and University Business Officers. Audio engineered by Andy Nelson and True Story FM. Music by Michael Bean. Post-production support by Janelle Dempsey. And I'm your host, Donna Shealy. Thank you for listening.